Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Well, there's a bill in Tallahassee that would make it harder to vote by mail if it passes. As the Tampa Bay Times reported this morning, Florida Senate Republicans agreed Tuesday that Florida's vote by mail process, which worked smoothly in the last election cycle, still needs a change. They want to erase all standing requests for mail-in ballots in 2022 and require voters to start over. After a record 4.8 million Floridians voted by mail in November, the Senate Ethics and Elections Committee in Tallahassee approved SB 90 along party lines to limit vote-by-mail applications to one election cycle and require everyone who signed up for mail ballots in 2020 to reapply them to get them in 2022. Current law allows voters who ask for mail-in ballot to have their request remain current for two general election cycles unless they opt out. Joining us now is Craig Latimer, the Hillsborough Supervisor of Elections. He's president of the Florida Supervisor of Elections, which represents the supervisors in all 67 counties here in Florida. And Craig, welcome back to WMNF. Good to have you here.
Good to be with you, Rob.
Thanks for coming on. So let's talk about this bill, Senate Bill 90. What do you think of it?
This is a proverbial solution to a problem that doesn't exist. You know, we've got over 400,000 people that are expecting to get their vote-by-mail ballot. And now we're going to have to turn around and try and communicate with them to let them know that, oh, they passed the law and you're not going to get it. You're going to have to re-up it again. It also brings some real issues to military, I believe, or overseas voters. You know, they're dependent on us to send those ballots to them, and I don't know that they're going to be keeping up with the fact that, oh, by the way, you don't have a request on file anymore.
Is there a problem with the list of voters who get mail-in ballots automatically after signing up the first year? 2 years later, they get this for the second year. Is there a problem with maybe people dying or people moving that you as supervisors aren't addressing?
No, you know, the situation is, first off, to get a vote-by-mail ballot, you have to be a registered voter, and you have to request that ballot. You also have to sign the oath on the back of that envelope that your ballot's in, and we physically compare those signatures to the signatures we have on file. You know, there's even a cure process for it. If the signature for some reason doesn't match, the voter can fill out an oath that they swear that is them and provide one of the acceptable forms of identification. So, you know, the sponsor of this bill said he was concerned about ballots going to houses that people didn't live there anymore. Well, that happens now. They've got a change of address. It comes back to us because vote-by-mail ballots are not forwardable. So, you know, we're not seeing this. This isn't a problem.
So the post office has to return. If somebody has moved from a location and they're getting a mail-in ballot, the post office is not allowed to deliver that mail-in ballot after somebody's moved.
If there's a change of address on file, the post office cannot forward that. It has to come back to me.
What if somebody has died? How do you know somebody's died?
That's regularly, the rolls are checked. This is done at the state level. And now with the ERIC project, there's 30 states involved in this. And so they're able to find people pretty quickly. But the state's linked in with the Social Security and other databases. And they notify us pretty rapidly of somebody that's passed away. Just a little side note here, Rob, if I send a ballot to somebody, and they send that back to me, but they die before Election Day, by law, that ballot still counted.
Under law. All right. Craig Latimer is our guest. He's the Supervisor of Elections in Hillsborough County. Craig, are you speaking for yourself, or do all Supervisors of Elections in all 67 counties agree with you?
You know, I haven't heard one supervisor yet that was in favor of this. What I'm telling you right now is my views. I can tell you that this is not one of the legislative priorities for our association.
I want to ask you about those priorities in a moment. If you have to, every year now, every election year, have to tell people if they want a mail-in ballot, they've got to request one. What's the additional cost to you as supervisors?
In a county our size, it's going to be several hundred thousand dollars.
And is that in your budget?
It is not.
And will the state subsidize you based on what we know now?
My budget comes from the county, and you know, we're going to try and work within our budget the best we can.
Let me go back. You mentioned that this is not on your priority list, the effort to make people request a mail-in ballot every year that's making its way through Tallahassee right now. What are the priorities that election supervisors have? What changes, if any, would you like to see?
Yeah, a couple of our priorities are around public records exemptions. You know, when people register to vote, they're not signing up to get on a mail list from attorneys or, you know, car warranty repairs. And all of that information right now is public at no cost to anybody. There's actually a website that you can go to, put a person's name in. It'll tell you what their political affiliation is, where they live, everything else. One of our big priorities that we're trying to get passed is for what we'll call super voting sites. This is an option that actually was used in Gulf and Bay County after Hurricane Michael via executive order. And basically what it would do is allow us to take an early vote site, call it a super voting site, and keep it open right through election day. So you'd be able to still vote there on the Monday before the election and then on election day. So that's one of the things that we're certainly trying to get forward.
And why is that a good idea?
Well, you know, we're having less and less voting on election day. I think a good example, this last election, we had 85% of our voters voted prior to election day. On election day, I had 290 polling sites out there that I had to staff with a minimum of five people, and we voted just over 100,000 people all day long, 12 hours, at 290 sites. So this would allow us to co-locate more precincts, and the voters, you know, wouldn't be disenfranchised in any way, of course.
Let me go back to this bill that would make it harder to vote by mail in Florida, SB 90. Are there any parts of the bill, any other parts of the bill that you're either concerned about or that you approve of?
Well, the second part of the bill we're in favor of, and we just did that with executive order, and that's to allow us to begin processing vote by mail ballots after we've conducted the logic and accuracy test. Right now, law says that I can begin doing that 22 days before the election. But with doing it after your logic and accuracy test, it could add up to probably 7 or 8 days allowing you to process these ballots. We're certainly in support of that. The third one is, of course, that retroactively removes anybody that's got a request on file right now. So there's 400,000 voters in my county that have a request on file. That request would disappear.
This is a bill that's being considered in the Senate right now in Tallahassee in the committee process. Do you know if there's a House companion to the bill?
I don't believe there is one at this time, but there's several election-related bills that are moving around right now, and that's always something that can be amended onto another bill.
Craig, is it your mission as supervisors of elections, do you have a mission? Like, is your mission to maximize the number of eligible voters voting, or what kind of mission do you have when it comes to turnout, if any?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I always say that the supervisor of elections for each county, regardless of their party affiliation, is the biggest advocate for their voters. You know, we want people to register to vote. We try and do everything we can to encourage that. The supervisor of elections are the one that pushed the online voter registration that finally went through a couple of years ago. And then, of course, get that turnout. You know, we did a tremendous outreach this last election, and we had a tremendous turnout, 77% in Hillsborough County, which was just huge for us.
And it was a mixed bag, too. I mean, if people are thinking about this politically, there were some there were Democrats who won races in Hillsborough County. There were Republicans that won races, and some Republicans won big in Hillsborough County. A big turnout doesn't necessarily benefit one party or the other.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. You know, Craig, I got to ask you about, you know, all the conspiracy theories that are out there, and I'm sure you paid close attention to all the claims that you hear around the country. You're not responsible for what goes on in Georgia or Pennsylvania, where people are making all sorts of wild claims. But how do you tell people in Hillsborough County and here in Florida, because you're president of the Florida Supervisor of Elections for all of Florida, how do you tell people that our elections are secure and that there's no mischief going on when it comes to electronic voting?
And one of the safe ways, and this is every county by law, I mentioned the public logic and accuracy test. That's where we take a random sample of our tabulators and we run what's called a test step through them. We know what the outcome should be. The logic is that that tabulator can see every line where a vote might take place, and the accuracy is, did it count correctly? And they do. After the election, there's a post-election audit that takes place, and you can do that one of two ways. Your canvassing board can randomly select a race and randomly select precincts, and you go find all the ballots for those precincts, early votes, election day, and vote by mail, and you hand count them to ensure the machine counted correctly. In Florida, we can also use an electronic audit system, and that's what I do here in Hillsborough County. I'm only required to do 20% of the precincts, but I do 100%. Every single ballot is looked at by another system to make sure that the tabulator counted it correctly, and it does.
Do you use the same machine to count the same ballots twice? I mean, to recount?
No.
Go ahead.
No, we use, it's a totally separate system. It's by Clear Ballot. It's called Clear Audit. It's a tabulation system that is used in some states that do nothing but vote by mail. So it's a tabulation system, and it's looking at the same ballots that my original tabulation system looks at to ensure that they're making the right choices.
So the machines are switched. You don't, when you're doing a check of count or a count check, you're not using the same machines twice for the same ballots.
Exactly, yes. No, this is a true audit where we're using a different machine to audit the first machine.
Craig, what do you think about the claims? What do you think about the claims that, it's easy to interfere with an electronic voting system? And, you know, you hear the claims in Georgia and Pennsylvania, and you're not using the same exact process as they are in Georgia or Pennsylvania. But do you have thoughts about the conspiracy theories?
You know, I watched a lot of the footage and saw what was going on. And what I saw in these other states were election workers going about their business of conducting the elections and following the state laws. There was this huge claim about the equipment. Well, guess what? There's 18 counties in Florida that use Dominion, and nobody claimed any of their votes were switched. I think these are just some really bogus claims that are out there. And, people need to understand that in Florida, we use paper ballots. We have logic and accuracy tests, and all the states do this. I know Georgia, for a fact, does logic and accuracy testing also. And that's what that is. That's a public demonstration to show that the machines, the tabulators are counting, and they're counting correctly.
A couple of email questions have come in, and let me just toss one or two of these email questions to you. Dave in Gulfport writes, I heard on an NPR program that the Republican Party has decided to put more restrictions on mail-in ballots nationwide, and Florida just jumped on board early, writes Dave in Gulfport. Do you know anything about this?
I do not.
Okay. We're talking with Craig Latimer, the supervisor of elections in Hillsborough County, for just a few more minutes here on 88.5 FM. Kevin writes this, the Republicans in Tallahassee prove once again how out of touch they are with the constituents which they supposedly serve. It's a blatant attempt to subvert the will of the people. This is the new Republican agenda, and it's a byproduct of the Browning of America. So, Craig, I'm not going to ask you to respond to that. You're here in a nonpartisan capacity. But let me ask you this. When ballots are counted, let's say that there's a question with a mail-in ballot regarding a signature, who's there to make the determination that that signature is either the correct one or the incorrect one?
Yes, sir. Again, by law, the people that I have that are reviewing these signatures and doing the signature verification, they have to receive training. The state provides training for how to do this. If they don't think it matches, and we've got a process in place here, it will go to a supervisor, and then it would go to a higher-level manager. If they still can't see the match, then that's when we start communicating with the voter to give them an opportunity to fill out that oath and remedy the situation, correct it. If they don't do that, that signature would then go to the canvassing board. The canvassing board is the only body that can reject a vote-by-mail ballot based on the signature.
And who's on the canvassing board?
The canvassing board in our county is made up of two county court judges and myself.
And how do you have any idea how many ballots were rejected in the November 2020 election?
That was a very small number, I can tell you that. One of the smallest that we've ever had, and that's because people had the opportunity to remedy the situation. I mean, we're talking way less than 0.2 of 1% of rejected ballots.
One last question before I let you go, and that is, how much fraud or crime is associated in Hillsborough County with voting? How many people try to vote illegally? Let's say they obtain a ballot of a dead person somehow, and you talked about how hard that is, but how often does illegal voting, or let's say that somebody's, they're registered in both Minnesota and they're registered in Hillsborough County, how often does an illegal vote happen in Hillsborough County?
Yeah, just that last example you gave, I would get people call me and say, hey, so-and-so's registered in New York, and they're voting up there, and they're voting by mail here. And I'd contact New York and find out, no, they didn't vote. They weren't even registered up there, as a matter of fact. They're voting by mail ballot here. Ironically, Rob, one of the issues we have is, we mail out the vote-by-mail ballots 40 days before the election. And then as we get closer to the election, all the ads start, and we'll get some of our more mature voters, I'll put it that way, that kind of forgot they voted by mail, and they show up to vote in person. And, we talk them through it and explain to them that we did get their vote-by-mail ballot back. And we try and get them to track it. You can track that vote-by-mail ballot back to the supervisor's office.
So when somebody goes to vote in person at the precinct, and let's say they've already voted by mail and they forgot, when they go to the precinct and the precinct worker opens up the book with everybody's name in it, what does it show in the book?
It would show they voted by mail already. And if they insisted on voting, they would vote a provisional ballot, and that would go to the canvassing board, who would deny it. They would reject it because the person had cast a ballot.
All right. Well, Craig Latimer, thanks a lot. Is there anything else you'd like to point out about anything regarding voting and the security of voting?
I just found the number, by the way. The number of rejected ballots in the 2020 election was 239. So not much. No, I just, we have a very safe and secure system in place. Governor DeSantis came out and said that vote by mail was safe and secure. The Secretary of State, Laura Lee, came out with a just tremendous statement about no matter how a voter cast their ballot in Florida, they would know that it was counted accurately and that it was safe. So we just continue to try and build the confidence in people, and that's the biggest thing. There's been so much absolute false statements that have put out there that it's a constant battle to try and fight this misinformation.
Craig Latimer, thanks a lot. Thanks for enlightening us on this, and thanks for coming back on WMNF.
Thank you. Have a great day.
All right. Thank you. That's Craig Latimer, who is the supervisor of elections in Hillsborough County. He's also the president of the statewide group that represents Florida's supervisors of elections. And we've been talking mostly about SB 90, which is making its way through the Florida Senate, that would make it more difficult for people to vote by mail. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. And if there's something that you want to comment about, you can always call us up at 813-239-9663. You can also email us here in the studio. The address is dj@wmnf.org. And soon we'll open up the phone lines. I'm just going to make sure that we've read all the relevant emails that have come in. Jeff writes, in the times of a pandemic, the option of mail-in voting should only be expanded. Doing a Google search of does mail-in voting benefit Democrats or Republicans, you will find many articles that indicate that mail-in voting benefits neither party. It actually seems to say that more people end up voting, writes Jeff. And Jeff, I think you're pretty spot on that. Thank you for that. Here's a few news stories that we could talk about. In addition to voting and possible changes in Florida's voting laws, the number of Americans applying for unemployment aid rose last week to 861,000, evidence that layoffs remain painfully high, despite a steady drop-off in the number of confirmed viral infections. Applications from laid-off workers rose 13,000 from the previous week, which was revised sharply higher. Labor Department says that before the virus erupted in the U.S., last March, weekly applications for unemployment benefits never topped 700,000, and that was even during the Great Recession of 2008-2009. So they never topped 700,000 before this crisis. Now, last week, they're at 861,000. President Joe Biden's administration is joining Democrats on Capitol Hill to unveil a major immigration overhaul that would offer an 8-year pathway to citizenship to the estimated 11 million people living in the U.S. without legal status. Legislation will reflect the broad priorities for immigration reform that Biden laid out on his first day in office. That includes an increase in visas, funding to process asylum applications, and new technology at the southern border. The plan doesn't offer any enhanced border security, a priority for Republicans. Without enhanced security, it faces tough odds in the closely divided Congress. The legislation is being released today. And if you want to comment about this, please email us here in the studio, dj@wmnf.org. Well, hundreds of thousands of people in Texas woke up this morning for the fourth day without power. And power outages in Texas dropped to below 500,000 this morning, but a water crisis is now unfolding. The Texas governor, Greg Abbott, says 7 million people have been ordered to boil their water before consuming it following days of record low temperatures that damaged infrastructure and froze pipes. Meanwhile, the storm is moving. Heavy snow and ice are expected today in the Appalachians, northern Maryland, and southern Pennsylvania, with the wintry weather headed to the northeast by Thursday night. The problems in Texas were first explained by the governor as owing to the Green New Deal, which is a proposal to make the country more energy efficient and release less carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. That proposal, which is really not yet even a bill, has never been enacted. But nevertheless, on Fox News and elsewhere, the governor of Texas this week claimed that the problems with the electric grid in Texas all had to do with the Green New Deal, and suggested that Congress members who backed the Green New Deal were responsible for the terrible problems this week in Texas. We're going to go to a PBS interview last night. This is one that was on the NewsHour, and reporter Stephanie Tsai did this interview on the NewsHour last night, and she tries to get to the bottom of why was the power grid such a failure in Texas, and we're going to listen to a portion of that interview right now on 88.5 FM.
What we had scheduled, what we had planned.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott deployed the National Guard to conduct welfare checks until power is restored. The weather brought COVID vaccine distribution to a halt in some places amid icy road conditions and widespread airport shutdowns. And it closed the Houston Ship Channel and Gulf Coast refineries, spiking the price of oil.
Just to underscore the scale of this deep freeze, the National Weather Service put out a list of 20 cities from the Gulf Coast up through the Great Plains that are seeing record low temperatures today. The demand is taxing the capacities of energy grids, most significantly in Texas. To help us understand what's happening, I'm joined by Michael Wara, director of the Climate and Energy Policy Program at the Stanford Woods Institute for the Environment. Michael, thank you for joining us. You know, Texas is the largest energy producer in the entire United States. How is it that residents there are in a situation of multiple days of power outages?
Well, it's a combination of two factors. One is really unprecedented demand for electricity during the wintertime. The demand for power has exceeded the grid planners' worst case scenarios by a significant degree. Also, power plants are not performing as expected, especially natural gas-fired power plants in Texas right now.
You know, it's interesting because some have actually used the energy crisis in the last couple of days in Texas to point out that Texas's turn toward renewable energy, namely wind power, is more the issue. Why do you say natural gas is the problem?
Well, I think, let me just say, it's a complex set of factors, but what we know right now is that the wind power plants are mostly meeting their expected performance levels. But what is not happening in Texas is that many of the thermal power plants, the plants that boil water to make electricity, like natural gas-fired power plants, coal-fired power plants, and at least one nuclear unit, are not producing energy. They're suffering outages, and that dwarfs the amount of wind resource that's not performing right now. So it really is a traditional power plant problem, not a clean energy problem.
Okay, but this is Texas, and they're not used to in February having peak demand for heating, for electricity. Could this have been anticipated in any way? And what does this say about the need to perhaps update infrastructure?
Well, I think this raises really important questions about how grid planners think about extreme events in the context of climate change. We saw in California this summer unprecedented heat waves that led to outages. And now in Texas in the winter, we're seeing an unprecedented cold snap. And this kind of extreme weather is what scientists believe is most likely to occur during climate change. And so it suggests to me that planners need to be updating their forecasts to take account of the extremes that are likely to come our way.
And what can be done in the near term that's realistic to update the nation's power grids to deal with extreme weather events, which you point out climate change is expected to bring more of, not just in Texas, but in California on the East Coast as well?
Stephanie, I think you used exactly the right word there when you said what can be done about the power grids. The most important step that the United States could take would be to invest in building a truly national transmission system. That's something that President Biden has suggested might be a good idea as a stimulus program. There's no question that having a national architecture for our power system would help us to avoid circumstances like what is happening in Texas and in the Midwest as well right now. If we had wires stretching from coast to coast, the places that had problems could lean on the places where there isn't bad weather, like where you and I are today.
And are you confident that renewable energy sources like solar, like wind, that the technology exists to store those energies the same way that natural gas would be, so that those transmission lines could actually reliably and flexibly carry that energy to customers?
Well, there's no question that long-term storage, particularly in the winter, is a really difficult technological challenge that we really don't have all the answers for yet. But we could certainly produce a lot more of our electric power from clean resources than we do today, and do it reliably and safely if we had a more robust transmission system. I think in the long run, we're going to have to solve some difficult technological problems, but that's in the long run. Today, we could put much more wind and solar on the grid and serve everyone's needs, but we are going to need to build a more robust mechanism for getting that power to where it's needed.
Well, there are a lot of people in freezing cold temperatures right now in Texas and elsewhere in the country that are hoping for some solutions. Michael Wara with the Stanford Woods Institute for the Environment, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, that was Stephanie Tsai, who works for the PBS NewsHour last night, explaining the Texas energy crisis. And what do you think? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. You can see that entire interview and the entire segment, which is much longer than what we played on the PBS.org website. It's interesting to me that the folks in Texas who were elected officials immediately went on Fox News and other conservative outlets to try to claim that it was solar and wind that were causing the outages in Texas. I can tell you for a fact that about a year ago, I was flying out of Detroit. I was on a short trip. Leaving Detroit, and we flew over through Windsor and then flew over southern Ontario. And if you look on the northern shores of Lake Erie, which is a really cold place, there were hundreds of wind turbines. And I flew in the winter. I flew in February, I think it was. There were hundreds of wind turbines going and going. And clearly, if Canada can figure out how to have wind power in the winter, certainly Texas can. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Susie writes, I volunteered early for early voting as well as the elections in the past. I can honestly say that Hillsborough Supervisor of Elections Craig Latimer runs a tight ship, and it's so consistent countywide. The opening and closing of the polls and the in-between is impressive. Thank you for having Mr. Latimer on says Susie. All right, Susie, thank you. Let's go to Carlos in Tampa, our first caller today. Hi, Carlos, you're on. What would you like to comment about?
Yes, sir. Just how you doing, Rob?
I'm good. What's going on?
Yeah, the impact for the rest of the state, the high bill for gasoline, power bill, probably is going to affect all of us. I will say within the whole these 2021 so far. And always there is a greedy someone who's going to benefit. You know, someone, these companies, they are multi-billionaires, and look what's going on. And the suffer, you know, someone is going to become billionaire of our suffering. I mean, here in our area in Hillsborough County, I'm sure you noticed, insurance for home went almost 50% higher than last year. I mean, there is COVID-19. There is no job. The home taxes, you know, property tax went up. And, you know, they always find a solution. We suffer from it, and at the same time, we end up paying the double price. Have a good day, sir.
Carlos, let me ask you quickly, but your homeowner's insurance went up. Tell me how bad was it?
Well, it was at least, I mean, according to them, it was, I would say, almost 35%. My insurance was went up by 55%. That's a big chunk of money, you know?
Yeah, it is a big chunk of money. And how does that impact your budget? I mean, what does that do to your family budget?
Yeah, especially when you have two kids that they are at the university right now and you need to help both of them paying the bill. I mean, it's a month to month. Basically, it doesn't matter how much you make, doesn't matter how many people are working in the household. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, and anyone that you talk to, it's like, oh, the budget is going down. I mean, hey, a lot of people, they don't even have a job. Just to show you, these people, we're lost and in their mind when they make a decision. We're a dollar sign. That's it. You don't look at a human being, whatever, a dollar sign. We need to make this amount. Let's go ahead and do it without thinking about the consequences.
All right, Carlos.
Have a good day, sir.
Thank you. You too. 813-239-9663. We really haven't done a program yet on skyrocketing homeowners insurance. I know it's happening. We did carry a report last week from Florida Public Radio, but it's probably something that we should look more closely at, and I promise we will. Paul in Thanota Sassa writes, I find it appalling that our Florida representatives ignore the input from this Association of Supervisor of Elections. They are the experts in our local counties. Not surprising, I guess. It is likely a nationwide drive by the GOP through Alex to reduce access and voting, writes Paul in Thanota Sassa. Paul talking about the American Legislative Exchange Council, which is a nationwide conservative group that proposes legislation in all 50 states. Paul, thank you for that. 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. And let's go to Fran in Largo. Hey, Fran, you're on MNF. What's up?
Oh, that was really quick. thanks, Rob. No, I hope you don't mind. This is just a quick thing about yesterday's show. I just didn't have time to call in. But you were talking about Representative Jeff Brandis and, you know, the tricky stuff he's trying to do with the minimum wage and all of that. Jeff Brandis comes from a very wealthy family. I believe his grandfather started a big lumber company. And they've always had a lot of money, and he has never had to really work hard a day in his life. I was itching to say that yesterday.
Okay, Fran, thanks a lot. I don't know. I'm sure he works hard, but I have read many stories that confirm what you say about his family money.
He never had to worry about not making enough in an hourly wage or paying his rent, or he always had something to fall back on. I just wanted to make that point.
So, Fran, why do you think so many Republicans have bought into this libertarian philosophy?
I guess it's to please wealthy donors, and they've never, a lot of them have never really known, like the rest of us, you know, especially the politicians, they've never really known, you know, how hard it is to make a living, pay bills, and everything keeps going up and up and up. A $15 minimum wage, as a matter of fact, everything else will probably go up anyways. Insurance, and if we don't get something done about health care, that's going to add to it. So, I mean, it's just, they don't have the empathy. They don't have the empathy.
All right, Fran, thanks a lot. Thank you for that.
Okay.
All right, so if you want to comment about what Fran said about empathy, you can call us up, 813-239-9663. We got the news yesterday, just as I was getting off the air, that Rush Limbaugh, the talk show host who became the voice of America's conservative movement, has died. His death yesterday at the age of 70 came a year after announcing that he had stage 4 lung cancer. With his three-hour weekday show broadcast on nearly 600 stations across the U.S. for several decades and a massive audience of millions hanging on his every word, Limbaugh's rants shaped the national political conversation, swaying the opinions of average Republicans and the direction of the party. Donald Trump awarded him the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the nation's highest civilian honor. So I just want to mention Limbaugh's passing. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. The governor has gotten into a bit of hot water yesterday as news outlets both locally, like the Bradenton Herald, and many other publications across the country are criticizing Governor DeSantis for opening up a pop-up vaccine site in two of the wealthiest zip codes in the area, and they're in Manatee County. They're also a place where a large contributor to the governor and to the Republican Party has business interests. And the governor was asked about this yesterday. We played this soundbite, but this is Governor DeSantis defending his pop-up vaccine site yesterday. This is what he told reporters yesterday morning.
But look, I mean, if Manatee County doesn't like us doing this, then we are totally fine with putting this in counties that want it. And we're totally happy to do that. So anyone that's saying that, let us know. If you want us to send to Sarasota next time, or Charlotte, or Pasco, or wherever, let us know. We're happy to do it. But I think most people, if we have an opportunity to bring vaccines and do it efficiently, I think that they're going to want it.
So the governor had this pop-up site in two of the wealthiest zip codes in Manatee County. He also has made a priority for the Villages and for Sun City Center for these pop-up vaccine sites. I know many people I talk to are having a real hard time getting access to vaccines. Even the process of going online or calling has become burdensome, as many people report to me that when they call or when they go online, they just can't get an appointment for a vaccine. Let's go to, by the way, you can call us at 813-239-9663. Let's go to Linda in Dunedin. Hi, Linda, you're on WMNF.
Hey, Rob. I'm just wondering, how is it that we can be going through a pandemic and millions of people have lost their jobs, and a lot of small businesses have gone under, and the stock market seems to be doing just great. And I'm just wondering when the bottom's going to fall out. This just doesn't sound like it's possible that things can kind of chug along.
Maybe the stock market isn't connected to how you and I do. Maybe the stock market's connected to something else.
Well, yeah, I'm sure it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, unemployment's up. The stock market did go down on the news today that unemployment is up. So maybe there is some connection. But I always think that the stock market is basically a giant gambling machine.
And I mean, people are buying homes at, you know, inflated prices all over the place. I mean, you have get into a bidding war if you want to buy a piece of property. And I'm like, where, you know, how are these, where, how does this happen? How does everybody have
well, Linda, it's not everybody that has money. But you're onto something, though. I mean, we've done a couple of interviews showing that billionaires have raked in trillions of dollars during the pandemic, and a lot of the money that's being made, and money is being made during the pandemic, is not going to average folks. It's going to the billionaires. So why is that? Why do we have wealth inequality in the country? Part of it's structural. I mean, you know, just think about this fight. You know, right now the national minimum wage is over $7 an hour. Florida's minimum wage is over $8 an hour. And people are complaining about raising the minimum wage nationally to $15 an hour. Well, you know, $15 an hour pays you $30,000 a year.
Yeah.
And if you take home $600 a week, I guarantee you right now, you would have a hard time renting an apartment for $600 a month anywhere in the Tampa Bay area. So if you're if you're paid minimum wage and they want to keep you paid minimum wage, you know what? While the billionaires are raking it in and people can plop down cash for a $1 million house in Clearwater, a Frank Lloyd Wright house, it's income disparity. And and it's structural. People are trying to keep that structure in place.
Yeah, well, they're doing a good job of it.
All right. Linda, thanks a lot. Thank you. It is a big problem, and I, you know, let's hope that folks in Tallahassee and Washington pay attention to it. Let's go to James in St. Petersburg. Hi, James. You're on M&F.
Hey, Mr. Rob. How are you doing this morning?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I think one of the things that I want each and every voters and citizen to understand, we may don't have the full power of the country, but one thing that's clear for us, it's we can vote. That's mean no matter where in the country they try to suppress the vote, create more laws and everything, they saw there was the epidemic was tough on us, but we come out with full force. We vote. And we're going to organize ourselves better and bigger because this is our time, this is our moment to make sure the voice of the people heard and to change our country. That's what I was trying to say, sir.
All right, James, thanks a lot. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I mean, to organize, you know, if you want to organize, it helps to have a national radio show like Rush Limbaugh if you want to organize in that direction. It helps to have organizations that fight for the kinds of things that you care about. I got to say that when it comes to fighting for, you know, let's say a better wage, you know, if you work hard, you shouldn't be nearly homeless. You shouldn't live in a hovel. And even if you make $8 an hour, $9 an hour, if you work hard, you should be able to afford a nice place to live. And right now, at least given the circumstances, you can't. And certainly Rush Limbaugh didn't fight for that. He didn't use his power to fight for folks that work hard and are paid $8, $9, $10, $12, $15 an hour. He didn't use his power to fight on their behalf. And so if you're going to have a movement, like James said, I think you need organizations, you need media, you know, that's what you need. Let's go to Gail in Crystal Beach. Gail, you're on M&F. What would you like to say?
Hi, Rob. Thanks for taking my call. What happened to the cost of living increase that we used to get every year? I think it was 2%. That goes back to the 90s. They did away with that. People cannot afford to live.
Are you saying cost of living increase for wages, for the minimum wage?
Everybody got a 2% cost of living wage increase. And when I moved down here in 1990, 91, 92, then all of a sudden it stopped. No one got the cost of living increase or any increase due to their performance.
Yeah, Gail, where did you move from?
I moved from Massachusetts, but I earned this money in Florida, in Pinellas Park, for a company, a big company, a manufacturing company. And there was a 2% cost of living increase every year. And if you did well, you got an incentive increase because of your performance. And that was standard in 1991 down here. But I did also want to talk about the COVID vaccine, please.
Okay, go ahead.
My mother-in-law is 90 and blind. And every time a vaccine becomes available, no matter where it is, my husband and I both buffer for the entire time, and they're all gone. This is ridiculous. Once you signed on to that Pinellas County website, which is where I live, your place should be held for the next time a batch comes in. This is ludicrous. If she was on her own, who has advocates today? You know, nobody. We've got to get somebody. I left a message for Ron DeSantis this morning. I said, get out. You know, what the hell are they doing? And I'm sorry to be so upset about it all, but it's just ridiculous. And I'm 67. I can't get one either. But I'm not concerned for me. I'm concerned for my mother-in-law. And I hope you guys have a great day. Peace out.
All right, Gail. Thanks a lot. Thank you. And I hope you and your mom are able to find that vaccine. Let's go to Patty in Sarasota. Patty, thank you for calling. What would you like to say?
A little while ago, you were talking about, you said the billionaires have raked in such and such amounts of money.
Yeah, several trillion dollars since the start of the pandemic.
Everybody, this is my opinion. Everybody says, oh, the system, oh, it allows them. You know, there's systemic racism kind of inbred of all of us in some way. You know, not, obviously there's different degrees or different, you know, you're not consciously or you're a Proud Boy. It can go many different levels. Well, there's systemic human greed, and I don't want to use the, because everybody freaks out, the biblical term sin, but the thing is that they cannot conceive of sharing or of tithing or of helping those around them. Now, I know there's a few people out there. There's smaller companies like Jersey Mike, who is giving away every weekend so many millions. They're getting joy out of it. They're mentally healthy. They're not mentally ill from their own money, because money, it's not, you know, it's so funny. People always, you know, the love of money, you know, money's the root of all evil. It's the reason Jesus said love of money is because it makes our minds ill. So you've got a lot of people who are smart, a lot of people who know how to make money, but they're very, very scared. And I saw a man who builds fortresses for people. It was a documentary recently. And he builds them for very wealthy people. You know, people are building bunkers, these billionaires. I guess New Zealand's a big hot spot. He said, and this was interesting, he said, of all the walks of life and people I've encountered, I must say the people with the most money are the most fearful. And so until that systematic, unconscious, or illness of spirit can be reckoned with them, each of them, in a miraculous, I don't know what walk of life, you know, how they're going to do it, then things would change and come out of the heart, come out of the spirit, your blessings then would flow, and there would be shareism. So it's a systematic human condition, and many who have money, I would say probably 90% of them have the illness.
Okay. All right. Well, Patty, thanks a lot. Thank you for that. Thanks for your thoughts. All right, if you want, we've got an open line, 813-239-9663. Patrick writes this, Rush Limbaugh used to say it's all about comedy and having fun, but Patrick goes on to say doing a hateful, divisive, and destructive show that polluted the body politic is not just having fun, it was totally screwed up, writes Patrick. So that's Patrick's view. Keith in Tampa writes, there are no houses by Frank Lloyd Wright. Clearwater's only work is in Florida, is at the Florida Southern College in Lakeland. Actually, Keith's right. I was talking about a house that was designed in the style of Frank Lloyd Wright that was done by one of his students. And it just it was on the market for, I think, $1.1 million in cash in Clearwater. And a little birdie told me that there's been a cash offer already, and I think it was just publicized within the last few days. Tim writes this, the problem is that more people who vote, the less likely Republicans are to win. It's really that simple. The Republican Party only appeals to a certain group of people. They do not have policies that appeal to a wide group of people except white Christian nationalists, writes Tim in Tampa. Tim, thank you for your thoughts. And Man writes, does anyone know how one gets a shot if you ride a bike or a bus? Man, I don't know. I think you can still get in line at those long lines. We got an open line, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Tim in Tampa. Tim, you're on. Thank you for calling.
I'd like to give my little two cents. I kind of agree with the lady just before me about these billionaires, where capitalism causes so much greed, it becomes a sickness. And then when you look at Rush Limbaugh, by all the money he made manipulating his audience, how much did that money did he take with him? Nothing. I don't get it where you have the means and the know-how. If you're worth $100 million, what else do you need? And I don't get these people. It's a sickness. And I'm not saying you give all your money away, but I'm saying the guy, richest guy in the world, he's stealing money from his employees. There shouldn't be an employee at Amazon making less than $30 an hour. I don't care if you're a janitor sweeping the floor. Can't he be worth $50 billion and pay his workers a living beyond a living wage since they're out there on the front line? It's a sickness. That's my comment.
All right, Tim, thanks a lot. Thank you for that. And let's go to Richard in Pinellas County. Richard, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, regarding the suppression of voting, I'm still reading Democracy in Chains by Nancy McLean, mm-hmm. and it goes beyond simply suppressing Democrats. As you know, these billionaires like Charles Koch, they don't want to pay any taxes whatsoever. So the effort to suppress voting is simply to lower the amount of people to vote, because in their mind, the smaller the electorate, the easier it is to influence them. So I think that they're content with everybody thinking, oh, it's an attack against Democrats, because then it riles up Republicans. But it's really to keep that base small, and for them to push over their ideas. You know, fewer taxes mean less social benefits and more money in their pocket, because they view democracy as a threat to capitalism.
So if democracy is a threat to capitalism, what do you do about it?
Yeah, do about what? The threat or them?
What do you think the solution is? I mean, let's say that democracy, that we all, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or a Libertarian, that you want to have democracy because that's the way people exert part of their freedom. So,
well,
go ahead.
Now, what were you going to say then?
So if democracy and capitalism are antithetical, what do you do?
Well, listen to Richard Wolff, get ideas from him. Tom Hartman has already said billionaires control this country. I would like to hear Nancy McLean back on your show. Because she has good ideas about it. I support candidates that speak to your wishes, but it's difficult. It's difficult to turn around because they've got the billionaires control most of the institutions. Buchanan, the economist that Charles Koch started to work with, Koch has put in his principles in most of the economic courses taught in it, in the United States. So, quite frankly, I don't know.
but Richard, I mean, a good example where if you're trying to maximize profits, that hurts people. A good example of that is in Texas right now, where they gave all this freedom to the giant for-profit utility companies in Texas. It ended up that those utility companies didn't harden their production capability. So when a big freeze came, the utility companies couldn't deal with it. So isn't that an example where you may like this kind of libertarian or Charles Koch philosophy or Buchanan philosophy, but it doesn't work in the real world?
Well, no, I'm not a fan of it either, but...
Yeah, no, I didn't think you were, but isn't that a way for folks that think like you to say, look, we tried it in Texas, didn't work. Let's try the other way, where you've got more government involvement, less profit motive.
Right, and you always have pushback from the Republicans. The same thing happened in California, where the electric companies, the utility companies, didn't upgrade their systems, and their systems caused wildfires. You've got such a hardcore group in the Republicans that are going to always fight for profit, and they're always...
All right, Richard, I'm sorry we're out of time. Sorry I wasn't able to let you finish your thought. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. We'll play those comments back tomorrow at 11 o'clock. Thanks for listening and stay tuned. Coming up next, you'll hear the Midpoint program on WMNF in Tampa with Shelley and